Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, I'm up by Saxon Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. Ricky, what'd you do to this weather?
Chief, the weather is crazy today, man.
What happened to the nice 60 degree? The wind is absolutely howling. There's water in the air. It was a tough walk, the block up to the house, up to the office.
Oh, yeah. Very tough.
What the hell? I blame Kevin. Kevin with us?
Yeah, I am totally responsible for it.
Well,
I accept full responsibility, but not the blame.
Well, there you go. Why aren't you in politics?
Well, that was actually stealing a notion from Richard Nixon the day he fired Haldeman and Ehrlichman. And he got up there and said, you know, I accept full responsibility for everything that's gone on here, and as a result, I'm firing these two guys.
There you go. Well, I guess you can be in a position where you are, quote, responsible, but really not to blame. I suppose that's possible. Right. I
mean, I'll run with it.
I mean, you could.
We could always go with Belushi and Blues Brothers when Carrie Fisher finally tracked him down.
He yeah.
rattles off all the excuses and finally says, "It wasn't my fault."
The interesting one of my old attorney buddies, older attorney buddies, when he was very young, they worked at some law firm. Not that young, but he said they. They really wanted to reach out and get some, you know, somebody high end, you know, high whatever the hell that means. So they, you know, they're a smaller firm. And to be perfectly blunt, one of the reasons why people hire people from prestigious law firms is maybe not so much they think they're that much smarter, but they think they can justify charging big rates right out of the gate even though the guy's only been there a day or a lady. Anyway, so they go, they get this guy from Harvard, Law Review. Absolutely impeccable. And they hired a guy. Well, it turns out the guy can't go past the, in those days, the copying department, when people used to have huge copying machines. Evidently, they had a terrific looking young lady in there, and the guy couldn't go by without grabbing her tush. So here's a guy. I guess it's your responsibility you hired the guy, but it's not really your fault necessarily. The guy's like, there's nothing in his record. References or anything that anybody to believe the guy was like that. Just happens.
So that's not good impulse control, is it?
No.
We go back to our pop culture references. There's George Costanza saying, "Was that wrong?"
Well, you know, you could do something.
That was when he was sleeping with the cleaning lady.
You could do something like ask her out for a date or something. I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do? Isn't that what most people do? I mean, I
think pretty much when you grab a woman's butt, she just melts in your hands.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Says, so throws her arms around you and says, "Take me, I'm yours."
Yeah, I don't think so necessarily, but
probably not. No,
of course.
I'm surprised he didn't get slapped.
Well, my attorney buddy said, "Look, before Human Resources decides to do something about this, if you do it again, I'm going to nail you." So that sort of ended it. My buddy was a boxer. So, anyway, that was in those days you could do stuff like that. You can't today, I guess. So the guy said, "Okay, grab somebody's tush and get a fist to the face. I guess I'll stop grabbing the tush, right?"
Stimulus response.
Yes. So hey,
I have a question for you.
Okay.
What words rhyme with joy?
Toy?
Because,
toy?
Well, because, you know, the Bear Down song includes "You're the pride and joy of Illinois." So we got to rhyme something new with joy, don't we?
You're the toy of Illinois. Maybe they
You're the pride and joy of Indiana. It doesn't just roll, you know.
No.
So,
Kevin, we talked a lot on the show, and something I think one of the things we all agree with is that you can see on all levels. I mean, I'm going to make the comparison between Trump's White House, all other people to some degree, and the mayor's office here, and the people in Indiana. It reaches the point where people give people money, and this is what I think we all love to talk about on the show when we're not arguing with stuff, is how this all works, and it fits in dramatically with Nobel Prize winner, my professor for two classes, because I love to listen to the guy, George Stigler. Politics is a business. You just don't understand the business. And what the what these people are telling you on all levels, it's everything, not everything, but a lot of stuff the White House does somehow drives money into, maybe it's the first time we've seen it, maybe not the first time, into personal accounts or friends' accounts. You see the mayor, every single thing is somehow driven through some supporter, community worker, community company, community something, something in bleep that somehow supports him money-wise and maybe otherwise. And you look at this thing, I've talked about different things I have here in the office, studies on stadiums in Salt Lake City and places that aren't here that I try not to have a feel for. I really don't care that much about a stadium in Salt Lake City. I guess I do the economics. And it comes down to some guy was on BBM. Unfortunately, it's been kind of a rough week, Kevin, because I had to go out and order my little dog had to be put down, right?
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, okay. It's the first time it's ever happened with the dog in my lap.
Oh, yeah.
It was a rough morning. Plus, the little bleep loved me for some reason. And I don't know how dogs attach, but somehow or another she attached to me. And what a pain in the ass she was, but kind of what a great little pooch. Anyway, I wasn't really ready for that. But on the way back, they interviewed some dude from like L.A. or someplace, UCLA Law School or something, and he was talking about stadiums. And he said, it almost sounded like Casablanca. It's still the same old story, tales of love and glory. The guy goes, it's always the same story. He says, the team makes money. The people who build the place make money. The people who have any kind of license to do anything at the place make money. And at the end of the day, the population gets it basically up the ass. And, God, Kevin, it's the same old story. I mean, it happens every single time. And the population is so dumb they put up with it. Is it...
It's not dumb. They're so invested. And that's what sports are about, emotional investment. I mean, that is what makes them so popular. And when you do that, you start to lose a lot of your, rational judgment. That gets suspended. And you see that in all kinds of other emotional relationships. You see that in romantic relationships where all logic gets suspended. So I wouldn't call it dumb. I would call it human. And, if you're really good at managing that, then you're going to be a leg up on everybody else. But I'm not willing to chalk it up all to stupidity.
I am, and I'll tell you why, Kevin. I don't have any problem whatsoever, with especially with the Bear fans that think they need a new stadium. This thing is going to be 40 miles away. But here's the issue with that, for me anyway. If 60,000 whatevers
or
70,000,
go ahead,
could be 80, decide they want to participate in this, and they're knocking the world Bear fans, by the way, I used to be when I was young, until I learned. If they want to do this and they want to have the world's best parking lot and they want to have you know, grills in the parking lot, if they want to have bathrooms in the parking lot so they can go tailgate and get messed up. Kevin, I could care less. But it's Ronald Coase who wrote the thing on economic externalities. If 3% of the population feels that way, pony up, assholes. Don't kick it on the other 97%. That's my problem.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable perspective. Yep.
If everybody who's a Bear fan, if they open up a GoFundMe page and ask every Bear fan to throw in $1,000 and they do, Kevin, this is America. You get to do whatever you want, right? You're supposed to anyway. I have no problem with that. If the chief and Kevin High School decides to go out and get a whole bunch of money and people send it to us for the nicest high school football stadium in the world, I have zero issue with that. Don't get money from the city and all the people who don't go to my high school have to pay for it. That's just me.
Yeah. So other questions related to this.
Are they the Chicago Bears?
Well, yeah, they can still be the Chicago Bears. The New York teams play in New Jersey, so.
Yeah, but the mayor allows that. What if we actually, I went through the list of teams yesterday in the NFL looking for some that might be anxious. I always thought Jacksonville wanted to move it. Aren't they getting a new stadium? I'm not sure.
I don't know their circumstances. But would they move into Soldier Field is the question.
The Bears just raised their ticket prices 13.5%.
Yeah, I get that. But would they move into Soldier Field, or would they be wanting to look for their own new stadium someplace else? Yeah, would the state of Illinois wind up doing it anyway? So I don't know the answer to that, but that wasn't really my question. That really wasn't my question. My question is, what would this, you know, what would happen with the ticket buying fan base? So I don't know what the what it is now. I don't know how many people are north suburban, west suburban, south suburban, and so on. But are people from the north suburbs going to regularly?
Did you see the thing I sent you yesterday?
I didn't get a chance to read it, so what did it say?
Exactly these questions. What is a fan base? How many people come from the north burbs? How many come from the west burbs? How many people in the skybox do it for, like, political reasons where they're bringing Chicago politicians? Does the skybox group travel to Hammond? Does it travel to Portage? Two different questions, right?
But now we're this is looking like Hammond.
Yeah, okay.
If it's going to be in Indiana, and I'm still not convinced that's going to take place.
Okay, so how many people, regular schmucks, the great unwashed, come to the Bear game via CTA? I'm going to say 12,000, 10,000.
CTA is fairly inaccessible to Soldier Field now.
Well, I've done it and. The amount of people getting off the lines at Roosevelt and trudging over there is dramatic. Not to mention there are CTA buses, and there are buses.
I get it.
Plus, there are buses from.
Get it.
Well, is the bar downstairs going to run three buses to Hammond?
That's a good question. So yeah, so that's exactly my question. Or are we just going to relocate the ticket buying fan base south?
Well, how
and I don't know the answer to that. I just think it's kind of an interesting question. And what's that going to, you know, how is that transition going to happen, or how would that transition happen if the stadium were to land in Northwest Indiana?
Well, if you were going to see, this is where one of us needs to be like a photographer or something, and we need to be on something where, well, we don't want our faces on the radio, but if somebody were to take a, I don't know if you want to do it for an hour, you'd bore the piss out of people. If you want to do a, say Arlington Park, which to me is like moving to Pontiac, how'd that work out for the Lions? They came right back to the city, but not right back, but as soon as they could. If we took a tour around Arlington Park and did a demographic study of how much money people have and how many businesses and how many potential skybox and premium seats, that's all anybody cares about, is the skybox and premium seats. Around Arlington Park, if you did a 10-mile or even a 5-mile little ring, I think you could find some probably very serious potential clients. Hammond? Kevin, when's the last time you drove through the south side to Hammond? Gary? I think there's a lot of potential Sky people. That They can't even fill up the real cans with.
No, but so where you're going is your reach there is going to be southwest suburbs, south suburbs, et cetera, and far south suburbs, you know, even heading down towards Charleston. And then you're going to be hitting up Merrillville and places like that that are where the northwest Indiana money is. So, you know, it's not, like I said, it's going to be a shift. I don't know if it's going to be a dilution or if it's going to just be a shift, but I don't think you're going to get a lot of people going from Lake Forest to northwest Indiana. I don't think you're going to get a lot of people from Palatine or Arlington Heights going to northwest Indiana, but you might, you know, you might get some, and then you might get people where I live who start saying, well, I can go to a Bears game now. It's not such a pain in the butt.
Well, it's possible, but then we're talking about.
Or if Notre Dame were to, actually, I probably wouldn't go to a Bears game over there, but if Notre Dame were playing one of its neutral site games there, I might go over there.
Well, you're asking a lot of questions that, really, the answers people don't friggin' want to hear. I mean, look at the couple people I know that have skyboxes. Kevin, it's all business. It's not about somebody, you know, dragging their kids there. One guy,
yeah,
I know.
That's why I don't like going. I go for the game.
Well, I mean,
I don't like going to the suites. You know, never have.
Now wait a minute. If we went to the seat at Wrigley, we'd like it. If we went and had the whole box for a day, could to sit outside.
Yeah, Because we'd watch the game.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying one of the guys I know, everybody would know the firm if I named it. He's retired, but he was a founding guy. Every single, this is, this guy and I were, when he was still down here, we were friends 8 years ago, Kevin, maybe? And they have one of the best, I might even say the best skybox at Soldier Field. I think McKenna's box is next to theirs or something. Then it was $2,000 a ticket, not including booze and food and all the other stuff. But that included, you know, four or five parking places and I guess a tour of the field for a few of the people up there. So it was more than just the box. But still, 20 tickets, $2,000 a pop. And you had to do it for exhibition back when they played, you know, three. Now everybody in that room was, these guys were in the money business. Everybody in that room was some potential to give them some city loan, O'Hare loan, business, something like that, stock business. They're a minority firm. So everybody in there, they might have their wife and kid, but everybody in there was there for a reason. And I know that the firm we used to be with, they had a skybox at Sox Park when Jim Tyree was a big Sox fan. But I went, you know, maybe once or twice, but there was a lady, and this just happened to be a lady, whose job it was to deal with that skybox. You're talking 81 games a year, 12 tickets. Is it 12 or 15 in White Sox? I don't know. And then the Cubs are 12, Sox might be 15. Every partner, or everybody who was a mover and shaker in a firm, got the box on several occasions. You had to give the lady a list of all the people that you were inviting, who they were they accounts, were they potential accounts, those kinds of things. You don't just pay, you know, however much a ticket for 15 tickets for 81 games and have booze and food there every night and hope somebody's buddies show up. That's not what you do. Any kind of firm's not going to do that. Everybody thinks this is all just a bunch of fun. It's not. Now, the question is, does a Mesereau, the Bears maybe, but does this guy's, if he invites the representative or state rep from, you know, Algonquin or someplace, are they willing to truck into Hammond? I mean, how many people, what about all the people who come from like Green Bay and stay in Chicago, have the weekend, go to the Bear game? Well, Chicago has a lot more to offer. They stay downtown. Are those people going to all of a sudden rent a car and go to Hammond, or are they going to all take the South Shore? What are they going to do? I mean, there's a million things in here.
No, actually, but what will happen to address that, and, you know, yeah, a lot of people would come to Chicago because of what Chicago and the Loop and area have to offer and so on, and I understand that. But, you know, this, whatever they build, doesn't matter whether it's Arlington Heights or or Northwest Indiana. It will be a stadium district. It will not just be a stadium. I mean, everybody has that. That's what they do now. Even the Cubs have bought up the neighborhood and built out a whole entertainment district in, you know, on the north side. Even Green Bay has bought up all the properties around it and built this whole entertainment district around the Shrine up there. So, it's that's the world it's going to be. So now the question is, can you create with the hotels, the casinos that are there, and all kinds of other crap to do down there, can you create a destination for those Green Bay fans, for those Detroit fans, or anybody else to come and park their butts there and have a good time? And I don't know the answer. I don't know how that's going to shake out, but that's what it will be.
Okay, but I don't want the risk of that being on me or you in Indiana.
I get it. Yeah, no, I get it. And that leads me sort of to my next question, too, is we always talk about who the connected people are that get all the jobs tied to the stadium. If it moves to Indiana, is that going to be a whole new group of connected people?
People do the I guarantee it, if Mayor Hammond's counting on it. I don't think that the guy who's going to get the security contract, the camera contract, and that kind of stuff is going to be from Chicago.
I agree. So you're probably looking at Northwest and North Central Indiana, and maybe you're probably not going to reach into Southwest Michigan.
I bet the people who construct it, you're probably still going to get the group from Kansas City that does all design, a lot of the designs for these stadiums.
Yeah, HOV, yeah. The construction is interesting because there's a lot of construction around the minor league ballpark in South Bend, and Notre Dame, with all the construction they do, has pretty much hogged up all the South Bend area local construction resources. So the development that's gone on the south edge of South Bend, has they've had to import a lot of labor from Northwest Indiana because it's all hogged up. Now whether we're going to see some kind of boom in construction companies along with and jobs to deal with that with the stadium and the areas and the environments around it, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Will they, and when we talk about a stadium district, is that going to include some retail, entertainment of various kinds? Is that going to include mixed use? Is there going to be part residential in there? That's all. I already know that's part of the plan for Arlington Park. So I would imagine that's going to be part of the plan if they go to Northwest Indiana.
Well, you always have to ask the question, Kevin, and it always sounds good. You see other people that have done it, and you also see other places that haven't. There's a place in New Jersey. There's a lot of people all of a sudden want to live in New Jersey, right? Because they can look at the stadium. I don't know.
I don't think it would be to look at the stadium. And I don't know anything about the Meadowlands area and what they've developed there. But your question is, do you have someone, if it were worth it to go to a Giants or a Jets game, which lately it hasn't been, as a road team, would you choose to go there, and would they be able to provide enough entertainment around the enough quality entertainment too? It's not just, is there a place to amuse yourself or a good sports bar? It's, are there other things to do in that area that would cause people from, division opponents, teams like that, to come up and enjoy a long weekend there? And I don't know a damn thing about New Jersey.
Well, but it asks a question on people's, motivation. I mean, in Chicago, I'll go back a bit. The most photographed and most visited landmark for ages has been Buckingham Fountain. And now maybe it's Millennium Park is probably in there.
Yeah, probably the Bean now.
For many years, believe it or not, it was the visitors gallery at the Board of Trade. Now you ask the question, look what the Cubs do for Chicago. Now, you don't know, but now if you're writing the article and you're pushing your product, or you're a friggin' politician, you're going to say people come to Chicago to see, a Cub game. Okay, fine. Well, now do they come to Chicago because they want to come to Chicago and they pick a weekend where they can go to a Cub game, where they might have come here anyway for all the rest of the stuff? or do they come just for the Cub game and turn around and leave? I mean, I don't know. I mean, unless you know people's motivations and you can, like, interview them and ask the right questions, you sort of have no right to opine on their motivation, right? I mean, is it just a weekend away? I mean,
Other examples, too. You know, when the Bears play in Las Vegas, do a lot of Bears fans go? Yeah, we know why they go. They go for all the Las Vegas experience.
Pick that weekend.
Yeah, you just go out for the Bears game. And lots of people do, I get it. When the Bears play in Phoenix, a lot of people make the trip, especially if it's late in the season. Why do they do that? Well, they're going for the weather. Phoenix has a lot to do, and they certainly, you know, if you want to go out and stay in Glendale and stay around the stadium so that everything you want to do is in walking distance, you can. There's other interesting stuff to do in Phoenix. I'll be there in, you know, another 2 weeks. You know, there's definitely interesting things to do, but, you know, is it the same kind of experience as going to downtown Chicago, or it's certainly not the same kind of experience as going to Las Vegas? Well, so, you know, I think the motivations are different for everybody's road team experience. Phoenix, you go for the weather. You know, if you go in November, that's a good time to go.
Well, and I think one of the issues that I always talk about, and I know you guys sort of are on the, I'm not going to say on the other side of this, but you question my concern about this, is the game itself, they're making the experience for people in the crowd worse and worse by the year. The NFL probably has not done as bad as that to, like, college games and stuff, but when I look at the Super Bowl and I saw, you know, I left first part of the fourth quarter and drove by a couple bars on Armitage, and they got 20 people left. I mean, how much hype? We're talking about something that starts at noon, finishes at, like, when did the Super Bowl end? 9 o'clock. We're talking about 9 hours of crap around a 12-minute of action. I mean, at some point, you are becoming the studio audience, and it's very obvious if you go to one of these games, you're not the people they're trying to entertain. And I don't even like. I used to love going to Bears games. I mean, when I was a kid, I couldn't wait to go to Cubs. Well, baseball has actually come back the other way. So baseball is back to being somewhat of a something for the crowd, because they cut the time between innings and so forth. But football, God bless, I was there with my cousin, I don't know how many years ago, and the Bears were crap, and they were playing some other team that was crap. But, you know, I don't care. It's still good football. And if you're there watching, you can watch the line play, you can watch the deep backs, you can watch a lot of stuff other than just the play and if somebody scores. So if you enjoy the game, it's like somebody really loves soccer, which isn't me, can go out and watch a 0-0 game and have the time of their life, because every little play they care about. Oh, man, it was a great little tackle. Look at the way that guy stole the ball. Look at that great pass. I mean, if you're into it, you like the sport. But Kevin, I'm sitting there. They come out of halftime, and it's cold. It was like 10 degrees. Maybe not 10, but it was felt like it. They come out, and the Bears are throwing. They can't throw for crap. They throw the ball three times. It could have been 20 seconds off the clock, and because what does a play take, 12 seconds? So say 40 seconds off the clock, they kick. Then there's like a 3.5-minute timeout. Okay, fine. Then the other idiots throw a ball down the field deep, the Bears intercept it. There's another 3.5-minute commercial. In the space of, it was like 12 minutes off the clock, and 8 plays were run. In like a minute off, I'm sitting there going, I'm going to be here till dinner, for God's sake. And these teams suck. I mean, it was a horrible experience. You know, we weren't boozed up. We didn't have a tailgate. I wasn't all liquid. You know, not that I want to be anyway. But I mean, I'm sitting there going, why aren't I in front of my TV? What am I doing here? And now they want me to drive to Hammond for this experience? I mean, really?
Yeah. And you know what? As you bring that up too, because I was thinking, the one place that really hasn't screwed it up yet, even though some of the programming in the arena really sucks, but you know, the stupid stuff they do to fill time, but college basketball pretty much fits within a 2-hour time slot, maybe 2 hours and 10 minutes, something like that. But they do keep that moving. When they're going to take breaks is totally predictable. It has nothing to do. It doesn't directly have anything to do with, okay, they switched possession for the ball, it's time for us to take another commercial break. You know, they have it set so that in the men's game, it's after every You know, every 4 minutes, the first whistle after 16 minutes, the first whistle after 12 minutes, and so on. So it's predictable. In women's basketball, they play quarters, so it's every 5 minutes of a 10-minute quarter. So that part they really haven't messed up, and I'm sure somebody will find a way. And that's why I really like going to college basketball games, because they do keep it moving. They, you know, I've always thought, for Notre Dame's purposes, as part of their deal with NBC, they should pick out the crappiest game on their schedule every year and say, we're going to cover this like they cover the Masters, with, you know, with limited or no commercial interruptions, maybe limited to the
I don't think you ever want to do that to somebody who'll find out what it should be like.
Yeah, well, I agree, but it probably would draw some interest for people just to want to check out the novelty, and then you take your sponsors and you give them a corner of the screen so that you have it sponsored by somebody. So it's limited commercial interruptions brought to you by Invesco QQQ, which is the official the official ETF of Notre Dame sports. That's true. That's a fact. I heard it on the radio. You could do something like that and make it kind of interesting. And you're right; they probably don't want to, because all of a sudden people would be demanding it. When you're talking about a really bad game against a bad team, what you're really saying is that would be really good for the crowd in the stadium. They'd be out of there in 2 hours.
Did you ever? I'm going to check your memory. Do you remember? It's long before everybody was on TV in every game. The Notre Dame game that could not be televised at all.
Yeah, only Channel 16 locally could do it. Yep, I remember.
I don't even know they were on 16, were they?
Yeah, they were.
But there were no.
But that's Channel 16 out of South Bend. It's not, you know, the reach is maybe to Valparaiso.
No, I'm talking about the game. You know, you could be right. They were on 16, but way back in the day when the, what was his name? The hell was the coach? They got.
McKay. Who's McKay?
So McKay leaves Southern Cal, and they get the, you know, they didn't get the spanking. They get thrown in jail, right? So they couldn't be on TV for 2 years, like any.
Yeah, the TV, national TV was a punishment that the NCAA used to dole out when the NCAA actually controlled TV rights. Well, and there was a limited number of times you could be on national TV anyway. It was like only two or three games that every team was allowed to be on a national broadcast.
Well, anyway, they come to South Bend, and I went to the game. And, if they were on 16, 16 didn't have the chutzpah to be able to call a commercial timeout. So the game just ran.
No, they didn't. They absolutely did not.
The game ran like a grammar school game. And I'm going to say, Kevin, each half was under an hour. And in the halftime, because they weren't on TV, I don't even know if the band played. The halftime was maybe 20 minutes, half hour. You were out of there. And, I mean, it was, I don't think the half was an hour. Was it? It was like something you never saw before. I mean, they just played, and every time there was a punt, they just ran out there and ran the play, and boy,
yeah. You know what? The other one I remember is that when Holtz was the coach, and I think they did. I can't remember if they went to a running clock or not. They were playing SMU after SMU came off of its 2-year death penalty, and they were awful, and the score was so out of hand. I remember, I have to check it out, but I seem to remember them playing a running clock in the fourth quarter.
I think, I know it happened a couple times under error. What we're talking about is every time, like, the ball run goes out of bounds and that kind of thing, the clock stops, okay? Well, so the Irish are beating up on some team. This is the era of era. And he met the other coach at halftime, and he said, how about if we run a running clock in the second half? The other coach said, fine. So, if you ran the ball out of bounds, it just kept going. Plus, in those days, college only got 25 seconds between plays, right? Where the pros had 30, and I think the college is going to the 30. I mean, I'm not positive. Well, now,
I think they go 40 actually, but
it's 40 from the time.
It's 40 from the end of the last play instead of 25 from when the ball's set.
Yeah, it used to be. I mean, for those that maybe don't know or don't care, it used to be when the referee put the ball down. I can remember this from grammar school. The referee would actually say the ball is ready. And I think that they from that time, you got 25 seconds or 30. But now you get 40 from when the other play's whistled, right? So the 40 includes getting up, getting back to the huddle, and all that other stuff. It didn't used to be the ref would grab the ball, and everybody could get ready in the huddle, and he put the ball down, and you got 25 or 30 seconds from then. Now it's 40 from when the other play ends, right, Kevin?
Correct.
And when does the play end? The whistle, or when they pick the ball up, or what?
Well, when the guy's down, when he's out of bounds, yeah, it's on the whistle that ends the play.
It's not when the referee gets the ball in his hands or anything like that.
No. It immediately, as soon as the play ends, you see it on the play clock.
Okay.
It just immediately starts counting. It's like a basketball play clock. As soon as the ball, well, in their case, it's as soon as the ball is inbounded, but essentially it's right after somebody makes a basket, because they usually just grab the ball, step out of bounds, and inbound it. So it works. It's that quick.
So, hey, Kevin, I'm flipping. We got a lot of numbers coming out today. You know, who knows if they're scrubbed or not, or they've always been scrubbed or never been scrubbed or whatever. But today we've got the GDP, first shot at fourth quarter last year, personal income, personal spending, and this PCE index, with the Fed comes out with it. Nobody knows any details, so it's totally useless for me, but it seems to be a mover. We've been talking a little bit the last few days, Kevin, about, and by the way, you talk about this more than anybody, what causes people to make investment decisions, hiring decisions, those kinds of things. I mean, that's basically buried in all the stuff you teach, right? And so John Lee, who's been on, he comes on Monday once in a while, he's going to come on Monday with John Flanagan, and he's a veteran of Accenture and those kind of these international consulting firms. And Accenture is, you know, some stock we take care of for people here. Take care of. We manage the risk. Accenture is down about $100 this year. And I look at OMC, the big marketing firm that we do some stuff for there. Up until yesterday, where they came out and said they're going to buy stock back, stock was up $10. It's been down 25-30%. IBM's kind of been down lately. And, you know, you try and figure out, I guess, if you don't like the administration, you say, oh man, you know, these guys are screwing up all this overseas stuff and things like that, or whatever. You could say, you know, that's not true. But what John's going to come in and say, sort of like what Bill Moriarty's done a few times, is just the nature of the projects that a lot of these people are into, what the planning time is, what the duration of them is, what the cost is. He was telling me last night about somebody Kevin bought. I don't know if it was a medical company or it was a, I think it might have been a financial company, where they bought two or three other places that had wildly different IT systems. And the amount of money to yoke them all together took like 100 guys or something from Accenture or wherever John was working at the time. It was like a couple of $1 billion or something to take all three or four or five of these systems and yoke them into one. And he said it was a nightmare for it. It was a ongoing.
Yeah, I've done it. I've been through, you know, 8 mergers and acquisitions personally. So yeah, I sort of get what the challenges are.
So before, you know, me or somebody rags it, well, because of what Trump's doing, nobody from overseas is you know, getting an Accenture deal or something. And actually, I was at a party last week where one of the lady's daughter works for Accenture, and she's on the bench, which means you're waiting for the next job, because that's how Accenture could show up Monday morning with 25 people that are qualified.
Yeah, and that's how every contract consulting company works.
Well, the question, she says, but she hasn't moved her butt off the bench in a long enough period of time where everybody thinks that the bench is going to like disappear pretty soon. And John last night was confirmed that they're going to, the chairman says they're going to start laying people off. Well, you never grow by laying people off. I mean, shareholders love it, but you never grow. So I guess we just try and start from the beginning and say, okay, what is the size of the normal job? How many people does it take? What's the time frame for planning it? What's the time frame for getting it done? I mean, and you know, my criticism of the current administration and the several before it is they come up with all these plans where they're gonna all of a sudden this business is gonna just pop out of nowhere. They seem to have, and I'm gonna say going back two or three or four guys, they seem to have no concept of the business decision problems to make these kinds of calls, and the stability that has to be in your mind to put yourself, essentially your own ass on the line and your own money for a 2 or 3 years based on some policy that somebody else is telling you. Do you believe them or not? Now, whether They're Democrat, Republican, I don't care. It seems to me that my uncle used to say, a lack of consistency is a greater barrier to success than a lack of talent. And I'm not so sure that isn't true, Kevin. I mean, I don't know, between Trump, Biden, Bush, Obama, any one of them would say something that I could sit there and go, I believe that guy, and I'm going to make a two-year project out of it. I just, what is wrong with us? Why can't we? I don't see people.
Do you not think that people like Besant and Vance have a grip on that stuff?
No.
I mean, they made a living at that.
A lot of people do. A lot of people. They've had. I mean, Robert McNamara was in the Johnson administration. There was no better executive on earth. Yet,
actually, it was Kennedy administration. But okay.
Well, he hung in there after Kennedy was dead. Right, he was a Kennedy appointee. I agree with you. But I'm saying, I don't know. My trust, whether it's there or not, it doesn't seem to have worked out that way. Let's put it that way, Kevin. I don't know that would I commit everything I own and sign my house deed over because of something Besson said? Hell no. Would I have done it for who was the schmuck that was Biden's guy? Hell no. I mean, I'm at a point where a lot of people don't believe any of these people, and I think that's hurting us. I mean, honestly, I don't know how you fix it, but.
Well, yeah, and I will agree with you that that when you are subject to the whims of one administration to the next, then you may be wary of making long-term commitments. So I think that's absolutely true. And maybe we'll see what November looks like, because if it's a radical change in the makeup of Congress, that might portend a new administration. Because when you're talking about administrations, who's going to be the successor candidates to Trump? It's either it's probably going to be either Rubio or Vance. There may be other people who get into the mix, but it's probably going to be one of those two. And if they are having any economic success along the way, if they are making any inroads with all the initiatives that they've started, then they'll have a good chance to win, and maybe people will feel comfortable after if the late year economy is better, they may feel comfortable making the commitments. But I understand why people would be wary now, because if they're thinking, I wouldn't even know who the Democratic front runner would be, but if they're thinking that it's going to be someone from the left side of the aisle, then they're going to have they're going to say, well, that'd be a radical policy shift, and I don't want to be caught up in those switches.
Well, I mean, I right now I look at the politics and the people running, I guess I understand, Kevin, that if you're running for stuff, you have to speak differently in a different guttural language than what you actually really believe, which is, I don't know how the hell we've managed to dumb down the population, but it sure seems like we have. I mean, if I was, God bless, if I was running for anything, if I was running against Trump, whatever. I mean, whoever the guy was, I look at some of the platforms of some of these Democrats that are running, and I go, I don't want that either. What do they got? I got nothing. I mean, I think there's like a vacuum here, but if I'm running against...
They're running the same social playbook that got them kicked, that got their butts kicked.
I can't comprehend that, but you're right. It's crazy. And which isn't to say, some of these guys I think are pretty bright. I think that's probably not... But right now, if I were gonna run, I mean, I could go into some long esoteric stuff about a 25-year problem with money management and things the government's done. It's all got it in the debt and all that kind of thing. I could go into this morass, which you would understand, our listeners here would understand. I think it ends up like a fart in church in the rest of the population. Now, if I were gonna run, I'd have to have something like, if I went to some analyst, they would say, if you're going to run against Trump, you say, Trump's family's made X number of dollars and he's been there. How the hell have you have done? That would be, now, I don't want a campaign like that, but that would be the message that hits people in the eye. Look, and if I got a number that said, Trump's family's made $1 billion in an office, how you doing? Okay, and if I was running against the Democrats, I'd do the same thing. Democrat, but Kevin, somehow we got to get over that and actually talk about the real stuff, don't we?
Well, and that's, you know, that's where, you know, what have we seen? We've seen a bunch of these bilateral trade agreements where there's a commitment of major dollars to be invested in the United States. Now, if that sits out there long term as a commitment that never comes to fruition, then, you know, it's all talk. If you start to see money actually being invested, and you know, whether it's facilities being built or investment in existing facilities to you know, increase production domestically, and that's starting to turn into jobs, you know, and if it's construction jobs or if it's permanent jobs, doesn't matter. If you start to see that, that's going to be a different message than, oh, we, you know, we're waiting for these trillions of dollars to come in and be invested in the United States, because that's all talk.
Well, see, you and I maybe have I'm not so sure it's a disagreement on this, and I don't understand this at all, to be honest with you. The idea that we have to have a president go somewhere, come here with an investment from overseas, which, by the way, he may or may not get a cut out of. If it's a good idea, Kevin, I sit here all day long and manage people's money. I look at the trillions of dollars in the market, the bond market, the private equity market. If it's a good idea, I don't need the friggin' Saudis here to do it. What am I? Why are we going around our own stuff?
They're not, though. They also changed the tax code, and I think I mentioned this on Wednesday, to accelerate domestic investments in capacity as an alternative to. As an alternative to importing this stuff, and you know that's all in that in the tax code change to allow people to recover 100% of their investment as expense in the next year. Now that's just accelerating it. You have to pay taxes the next year on the because you don't have depreciation expense, but nevertheless, it's to try and give that a shot in the arm.
Yeah, the only problem with that is, Kevin, you can only depreciate, you can only take off expenses if you have income. You can't just write stuff off if you don't have income. What do you write it off against? You behind?
I'm not sure what you're saying. Of course, you have to have income.
I know. Well, okay. So a startup, the last thing a startup needs is more write-offs. They're not making any money. And how does that affect, you know?
Well, it depends. If you're a startup, the first thing you do is you start up today, you close out your fiscal year tomorrow, and now you're into the next year already.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is the idea that you're going to give, that doesn't help. If you're a startup firm that says, okay, in the pick a business, the chip business, boy, I tell you, that's got, what are you supposed to, lead time for that is 8-10 years? Ugh.
A long time. We do have some producers domestically, though, who are amping up, you know, existing production. So
Kevin, do you have any idea how that works? You know, the manufacturing I've been involved in, maybe all manufacturing is similar, maybe it isn't. If you have a line, for lack of a better term, a production facility, whatever you want to call it, and all of a sudden you're making, you know, 500 widgets a year, and somebody says, well, can you make 550? Probably by, you know, maybe a second shift once in a while or a Saturday. But you got to be careful there, because if the same people start working 48 hours a week, after a while you get the same thing out of them you do for 40. I mean, Pullman had research on that going back to the 1800s, but...
Or you start to burn people out, and you start to get absenteeism.
But I mean, you can probably ramp up 10-20% in the same place, but at some point, if it starts to be 40-50%, you need, you know, almost got to double your capacity, right? Which, again, is difficult, because if you have to double your capacity, because that's what a new line can do or a new production facility can do, and you're only 50% up on revenue, therein lies the risk, right?
Yeah, but if you're running one shift, and then you can start up your second shift, and you can match your capacity to your growth rate, then you have a good strategy there.
Yeah, assuming the people for the second shift aren't a bunch of dodos. You know, I mean, whether you can keep your quality, which is,
well,
Assuming.
Yeah, but of course, but you can do that.
Yeah,
you know, well, well-run companies do that all the time. It, you know, poorly run companies don't. And you talked about, you know, what causes people to hire and why, you know, why are some of these benches so populated at the moment in the consulting world? And it's the same reason that we're seeing, you know, we're seeing layoffs now that are being blamed on AI when really they just went over, they went crazy after COVID in their hiring process. It's because the poorly run companies do hire too much. You know, when times are bad, they lay people off. When times are good, they go, "Yeehaw, let's spend." Yeah. And they do that. And I've, you know, heck, I've worked for companies that do that. And it, you know, it's discouraging to see because you can see it unfolding in front of you and say, "We're going to have to pay for this." And you know that.
But we're also in a situation where, and this is not. Every president, pretty much, I think these guys are worse, but every president has found a way to mess with the numbers so they put a better story on for the economy than people are getting. Now, today we're supposed to get this terrific GDP number, where if you put a decent deflator on it, I think you might find that it's... And when you have an inflationary period, which we have had to varying degrees for quite a while now, not just Trump, the numbers really become almost meaningless, Kevin, because you can, you know, somebody can walk in and pay $125,000 for some super tricked out pickup truck. It's not the same as three people buying a $40,000 pickup truck. It just isn't. Yet it shows up the same. You know, and if you say your deflator is only 1% when it should be 5, you can mask this for a long time. I don't know that the economy is as healthy as it's being shown. I don't think it is. You hear stories about layoffs constantly. I don't know, Kevin.
The only thing you can say for comparative purposes, you know, year over year, month to month, and any of those is the methodology consistent? If it is, then you can use it for comparison. Whether it's accurate or not is another issue, or whether it's, you know, it's right. But at least if you have consistent methodology and you say I'm measuring inflation the same way every year, every month, every et cetera, then at least you can use that as a comparison for past performance. Same thing for GDP. If it's consistent, I don't know that it is. I don't know that it isn't. But that would be my question always to ask.
I would say that
did you change anything in the measurement process?
I would say that in an inflationary environment, you don't have to. It's all. When I get this way, Kevin, it's because I can't count it. I guess I could put a regular cab pick-me-up, if you could find one, base bones compared to 20 years ago, I could do that, but you can't find one. To buy a truck, it has the thing on the lot is all tricked out, and it's $80,000. Okay, now, is it fair for me to compare that particular truck to the one 20 years ago? No, but I don't want to buy. I don't want a 10-speed transmission. I want a 4-speed. I mean, at some point it becomes very bizarre. But hey, I got a question of semantics. We don't have that much time. I was talking to somebody the other night about the hockey players, and he's a big hockey fan, and he was saying that the U.S., Canada, Sweden teams are all pros. Finland is mostly pros. The kid from Fox is playing there, Teravainen. And I said, I looked at him right in the eye and I go, tell me who's not a pro. It is exactly the, is anybody anywhere not getting paid, Kevin? The term amateur we should take out of the Webster's next year. I mean, what do we...
Well, that's fine, but that doesn't mean Olympic hockey isn't great.
It is. I'm just, my point is when you try and make this, the idea that, for instance, a college kid who plays, he's not a pro. Yeah, he is. He's just at a different level. So, well, my point is, people are not comfortable with the idea that everything they watch now, everybody's a pro. Someone's soon to be in high school. And we're mentally, we've not made the shift. And one day, individually, we're all going to make the shift. I don't look like at Notre Dame players like they're amateur anymore.
No, they're pros. You know, I used to have a policy where I won't criticize specific players because they're getting compensated with tuition, room, and board, but they weren't paid professionals. But now, they're paid professionals. I have no problem with, you know, very publicly criticizing the way a player plays for Notre Dame, just like I would for a way the player plays for the Bears.
I have a question for you.
I have no problem with that.
A simple question, really. The complexity of how people are getting paid. I could see, well, actually, I'm not so sure why tuition was never a taxable thing, but it wasn't. So now, if, for instance, the Notre Dame, Illinois, Michigan people, the football players all got $20,000 a year from the school, or 50, or whatever the number is, for having to perform this service, which it is, hell, it's a lot harder than working in the dining hall, and you get paid for that, right? So I really don't have an issue with that, because you really can't work in the dining hall, going back to our days, because you have to be at practice, you got to be here, all that kind of stuff. So I get it. But now, if somebody else, if you and I decide to pay PTI Securities for whatever, God, my brother would shoot me. If I decided to pay a quarterback $1 million a year because he go play for Notre Dame, that contract, that's not with Notre Dame. What if he doesn't even start after 3 weeks? Can I cut him? Why not? They cut people in pros. Why? Who governs that stuff? Why can't, if the guy turns out to be crap, why can't I cut him? When my contract...
Why can't you for your PTI contract?
Yeah.
Well, because it depends on the terms of your contract.
Yeah, I mean, why can't... Hey, you were supposed to be a Heisman Trophy kid. You're not even first string. Screw you. I mean, that's what pros do. I mean, I guess you can't be half a gangster. You can't be half a pro, Kevin. And
well, yeah, but if your contract is for the entire year, then you got to honor the contract. But if your contract is contingent on playing time, then you'd be able to walk away from it. It's that, you know, that's pretty straightforward.
Well, how was a pro contract in football, not baseball, worded that you could cut anybody any week, and that just did. I mean, I'm going to pay you $2 million.
You're still on the hook for salary for almost everybody. Sure you are.
Not until maybe recently. But very, very few guaranteed contracts in pro football. Very few. If you cut a guy 1 week, he didn't get paid next week.
No, I understand that that it's not guaranteed, but that's why they get upfront money instead.
Well, okay, but they didn't. That's a recent phenomenon.
Well, it's a 15 or 20 year phenomenon. Well, it's a salary cap phenomenon.
Well,
it's not that recent.
But I'm saying if you went back to the, well, I guess for you and me, it's not that. I mean, a 90s 2000 contract, and out of a 40 man roster, I'll bet you five guys are guaranteed.
Yeah, well, the 90s are over.
Okay, but I'm saying, some of the money up front.
Tom, this is why they always talk about what's the cap hit for cutting a guy, because, if you pay a guy $5 million a year, but you give him $20 million up front let's say you pay him $7 million a year for a 2-year contract for, I don't know, we can do the math, but whatever it is, but you give him a large amount of money up front, you get to take the total dollar value of the contract, and for cap purposes, you spread it over the total duration, the total term of the contract. Now, if you terminate the contract before the term, you have to take any unallocated funds, and you have to accelerate them into the current cap year. That's why they do it that way. So you can say it's not guaranteed money. For the player, it was guaranteed because you already wrote that check. And it becomes a management issue for the team to try and manage their salary cap accordingly.
Let's loose settle this. I'm gonna give bet next week. An average football team has 45 people. I'm gonna say 30 to 35 are in my group, and 10 are in your group. And that if you got cut, you're just out. You think you're making $1 million, you played 2 games, you made $200,000.
And what's your point? I'm saying 35 people?
Yeah, I'm going to say most of the regular players are not in the... I get the part about the players have figured out that if you're going to be like a big free agent group, free agent signing, you're not going to sign for... That's why Brett Favre and those guys signed, you know, 5-year, $9 zillion contracts, because they played 1 year, they didn't get the rest. Well, okay, now you're right. People have said, I need the bonus up front. I don't almost even care about the pay. Because if you cut me next week, I get to keep my money. You're absolutely right about that. I just wonder how many of the 45 are in your camp versus my old camp.
Well, I think everybody is to some degree except the practice squad players.
Okay, well, last little. HP probably still knows. What do you got going this weekend?
Hey, I got to turn you over to Carl because I'm sitting in the parking lot. I got to go upstairs to my office. So.
All right. You sound good. You feel good? You feel good?
Yeah, I feel all right.
Good. Carl, what's up, man? You've been listening and not speaking. That's not very Carl-like.
Well, I was letting Kevin have his time without interrupting.
Well, because last week you had to cover him because he couldn't talk, so I guess it's...
Well, I understand that, so, you know, but I mean, it's called comedy, you know, something that we don't have anymore in either the political or business realm.
No, we don't have anything.
So, let me point out where, you know, we got this Bears thing going on, right? You know, because we do talk about sports once in a while on this show, as well as business things. Okay. I sent around one of the articles that I posted a few days ago to the list. I'm sure you guys all got it, and you probably did an eye roll when you read it.
No.
Let me point out where all of this problem comes from. And it's going to make everybody who listens extremely uncomfortable. It's one of the reasons that I run my own site on my own hardware and my own infrastructure is that it's very hard to cancel me when I do that, you see. And if I was to, you know, I can put it here. We'll see whether or not you get canceled.
Okay.
All right. It's this. There is, and I've talked about this a lot over the last couple of decades, and actually going back in the 1990s before I had there was an internet thing to do this on. And that is, you take all the people, for example, that have looked at the Atlantic Ocean, the eastern side of it, from the British Isles all the way down to the tip of Africa, and you will find that there are a small percentage of the civilizations, none of which, now we're talking about going back, you know, 1,000 years now, right? None of which had any interaction with each other. A small percentage of them dreamed of buildings they would never actually set foot in themselves. In other words, they'd build something, but they knew damn well it would not be finished in a human lifetime. All right? And they also dreamed things like, oh, there's something other than fish in the water at my feet on the other side of that ocean that I'm looking out over. Okay? Now, that is... most people, and by the way, one of the, you know, everyone knows about this example of that was Notre Dame. Okay, it took almost 200 years to build the main structure.
Yep.
All right. So, I mean, we're talking about from like 1150 to like 1350 or something like that. I'd have to look up the actual exact dates, but, you know, 200 years. All right. So, what was the average lifespan during that period of time? Like 40 years or something like that?
I was going to say 40 to 45, maybe.
Yeah, so we're talking about 5 generations, okay? Yeah. The guys that built it not only knew they would set foot in it, they knew that their great-grandchildren wouldn't set foot in it, right? All right, so, but they built it anyway. And this is because these people had a context and a concept of future perfect tense. All right, now, what is future perfect tense? It is... the precept
I learned it in Latin a long time ago.
Well, that's right. It is the idea of a future thing that's going to happen with a known time. Okay, with a determinate time frame. In northern latitudes, if you did not have a concept of this in your head, you did not survive the winter. If you did not have the context of being able to put back food during the summer months, when winter inevitably came, you died.
Yeah.
I mean, that was that. Now, that may explain the difference in the cultures all by itself. In other words, some of the people who were too stupid to be able to figure this out didn't survive long enough to reproduce. Maybe.
Well, a Chief, creature of what you're dealt with. I mean, no.
Well, I understand that, but you know what, Chief? I don't know what the explanation is. It doesn't matter. Okay. The fact of the matter is the majority of the population of this rock do not have this context. And in many languages, there isn't even a future perfect tense.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist as a language construct, all right? So, I mean, obviously you can't, you know, if you don't have something in your head, you're not going to develop it in your language.
What you're saying is that people who put the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution together knew this was supposed to last for like 1,000 years, long before them, after them, their kids, their grandkids, and everybody.
Right, and here's the problem that you have. We have, and this hasn't always been the case, all right? When this nation was founded, to have the franchise, you had to be a landowner in order for you to be able to vote.
No, the landowners wrote the rules, so they.
I get this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Don't try to sidestep the implication.
I understand.
The problem. Yes, you are. And here's the implication of what we have today. Here's the problem. You have, you know, you take a look at all the stupid stuff that's going on today. All right, this thing with the Bears is just one example of many. We now have the Medicaid data, has the basically the pay data for providers has been dropped by DOGE. All right, it's de-identified, so you can't figure out who it is that got the treatments. But provider identification numbers are public record, all right? So they're in there. And it's de-identified and it's aggregated, so you cannot try to find that, you know, Tom Howe, you know, had psychiatric treatment under Medicaid, you know, last week, okay? You're not going to be able to do that.
I could have used it this week with the little pooch being put down on my arms, I'll tell you that.
Well, I could have used it for a lot of reasons over the last 5 years, all right? But here's the thing. A trivial examination of this data using nothing more than a couple of database statements, and I could actually go through exactly what they are, discloses indicators that are absolutely certain showings of fraud. In other words, you're not actually providing help to people, you're stealing money. All right? Absolutely no doubt that that is going on. Now, I can find it in seconds. I've got a guy on my system who uses a analysis and graphing software called R, which it's basically a language. I don't use it myself, but it is very useful for this kind of analysis. All right, and he sucked the data set into there and has started grinding on it, and he found the same sort of thing that I found within seconds as well. Now, this database goes back to 2018. So what we have here is we had the Trump administration, we had the Biden administration, and then we had the Trump administration again, right?
And so before that, we had two that weren't so hot either.
Well, but the data only goes back that far,
yeah.
Okay, that was released. Okay, yeah, then we had one.
I think all this started, Hal sent out the question yesterday, when do you think all this happened? I think the medical stuff started around 2000.
No, the medical stuff started when we had a Supreme Court case that said that what they were doing was illegal.
Yeah, and everybody said it was okay.
Nobody went to jail.
Yeah, nobody went to jail. Nobody, okay. Nobody was even told to stop.
By the way, that was 1979.
All right, can I?
All right, now hold on a minute.
Let me
finish it. Then you can go ahead and you can rag on it all you want.
Oh no, I'm not ragging on it at all.
So here's the point. This is trivially discoverable in this data set that's been released by anybody who has 30 seconds worth of desire and the kind of computer that I have here at my house. The government obviously has computers that are 1,000 times faster than one I own. All right. And yet no one from either the Democrat or Republican side, and we've had Democrat administrations, we have Republican administrations, we've had Democrat Congress, we've had a Republican Congress, we've had majorities of both parties in one side or the other during this period of time. And this database documents a massive amount of theft, flat out stolen money that was taken from people, and not a single scintilla of assistance to a single person was provided in exchange for the cash. Now, both parties, when Doji first came in and started looking into these data sets, screamed bloody murder and sued to stop them, not just in Medicaid, but in Social Security, in Medicare,
yeah,
in all the other major programs, all right? And the argument was they're going to release people's personal data and use it to persecute them. That was a complete load of crap.
Well, sure was.
The entire bottom line here, Chief, is that for the last 40 years, back to this decision, back to the Royal Drug decision from the Supreme Court, the government at both state, and remember, Medicaid's a state and federal program, not just federal, the government at both the state and federal levels not only has known about this robbery, but has been actively involved in participating.
Well, absolutely. They're part of the grease.
And, oh, by the way, the problem with this is, let's just say that you have $100 in a program and 10% of it is a scam. And you have 10% growth. You want that because you're a business and every business wants growth. Government is a business. Every business wants growth. The first year, it is $10. The next year, it is $11 because it's
$10. The problem there is that companies, if they screw up and grow too fast, they go under. The government never goes under.
Well, that's right. But now, here's, but Chief, think about this. What do you think, what happens to this with just 10% being a scam, a 10% compounded growth rate over 10 years, but no, what happens over 10 years? What does that end up being?
Yeah, you're up to being way more than 100%.
It's actually two and a half times.
The rule of seven, right, or whatever it is.
It's approximately two and a half times, right? Now, that is without a single penny of actual expansion of benefit to the public and actual growth. So in other words, 170% or something like that is stolen of what was originally stolen.
Okay, can I critique this?
Right, now wait,
I know,
Chief,
I know where you're going.
No, over 30 years, how much is it?
I get it, but I think the part that you know how much I've learned from you and how much I lean on you, and we have the same personality in a lot of this stuff. The difference, I think, is somehow, and by the way, I feel as strongly about it as you do. You might not believe that, but there's a psychology to this. And one of my class at University of Chicago that I wish I even remember who the guy was. I don't know why somebody's calling me at this hour. It comes down to what can you or I do sort of about it. Now, you are in a unique situation. You're a very bright guy. You love the research stuff. And you don't mind putting your ass on the line and writing about it.
Yeah.
Everything you talk about, except I don't agree at all with the part about the people are here illegally. I think you let's leave that for another day. But it comes down to, and I wish this professor, probably not even still alive, it has to do with your ability to fight it. Now, I know that the stadium's a bad idea for people.
Right.
Okay. I also know that if we got a call from the Hammond mayor and said, why don't you two idiots shut up, and by the way, there's a beer stand in your future if you shut up. I suspect you and I are dumb enough and honest enough to say keep your beer stand
up yours.
Yeah,
right.
but it would be, if you got a sick kid, if you got people who are depending on you, these are not easy decisions. But
no,
I do know one thing. Here's the crux, and this guy had a formula for it, Carl, that I cannot remember. For the people that it's worth it to, they can bring way more to the argument. I mean, there's no way on earth. I mean, what happens to my clients if they find out 5 days in a row I'm walking down the street in Michigan Avenue with a sandwich sign on saying the stadium sucks? They say, wait a minute, the dude's supposed to be watching my stuff. I mean,
right.
There's only, if somebody agrees with you, and nobody, Carl, with the number you put in front of people when it comes to this medical stuff, and people's, even the dumbest among us realizes, wait a minute, I just had a $15,000 emergency room visit. The guy didn't do anything. I mean, there's nobody who doesn't understand what you're talking about. Yet, how is it that this either becomes an election piece, which it isn't? How is it that all of us somehow can figure out a way to bust into the prize fight ring with some chance of winning, except against the other guy who happens to look like Mike Tyson? Because it's everybody's been paid off by these guys. It's people that are on the take. We can't, you know. Actually, you know who kind of taught me a lot about this is the guy who listened to my show when John and I were on a long, long time ago. He comes in and he's a dude that works for. He's an expert on, boy, you and he, if he was, I don't even know if he's still alive. He was old when he came in. He was an expert on electric power. Now, I think he might have been a nuclear guy. I'm not sure. He comes in and, you know, he's opened up an account. And I think he might have died because the account's not here anymore. But we talked, imagine me talking for like 3 hours with somebody. He worked for all these citizens utility boards. And he said, the fight is not even. He goes,
of course not.
He goes, they'll hire me. When he says when they hire me, I charge him like next to nothing because I'm retired. You know, who knows? I think he was charging, you know, $25 an hour or something. I go to these things. They help him write all this stuff up. And we just fought, was it Commonwealth Edison, on some pay hike. I mean, this is we just moved into this office, so it had to be 20 years ago. And he goes, we win the fight. Amazing amount of volunteer time for those people. Some whatever group it was, they found a way to get some money. They paid me a little bit, but they paid me something. They had a few secretaries back when you could use that term. He goes, now, Commonwealth Edison, we went out, we went to this bar, he goes, some cheap saloon, and we're having a bunch of drinks. And before we got home, they had already filed another increase.
Of course.
And he goes, not only that, the cost of all the lawyers they used to fight us and lose,
they put it in there,
is now become an expense, so they want even more this time because of the expense of fighting the last time. He goes, we won, but did we really?
I mean, exactly.
It just, right. So this concept, I mean, you're absolutely right, and I'm absolutely right about the stadium, and I'm right about a lot of stuff. But the fact is, I can't bring, and you can't bring, enough to bear because the individual person who just got nipped $5,000 in the emergency room doesn't have another $20,000 to fight the...
No, see, Chief, this is where you don't want to connect the pieces, okay? What was the start of this? That we've got a huge percentage of the population of this rock who cannot think in the future perfect tense. In other words, they don't understand. You can try to explain to them what I just did about exponential expansion of scams.
Okay,
how,
but you, but you
what
can.
Happens.
All right, the part
and
I think
they,
you're missing
they
here.
Will not,
you
they
don't.
Will
you don't care if Zuckerberg looks for 500. He's got enough money. He doesn't care. He doesn't have to live here. That's where we've got. This is going to such an extreme.
But Chief, he didn't start there. But what he did start with was an understanding of the future perfect tense, and he exploited the fact that 80% of the population of this rock don't have it. And we have spent the last 30, and this is where you're
wrong. But he didn't make his money in the equator. He made it here.
Ah, yes. And guess what? What have we done for the last 30 years? We brought a bunch of people who can't think in future perfect tense into the United States.
I'm not so sure. You can't make that generalization.
Oh, I most certainly can. Excuse me, do you really think that when you take a look at the last names, you just take a look at the data in this Medicaid data set for the people who, the largest billed providers for a particular kind of health service in the state of Maine, okay? Just sort by size, a number of dollars, number of claims, number of dollars, average per claim. They're all from one particular ethnic group, every one of them, all of like the top 20 in one state. What is the probability of that on other than an organized basis? It's zero.
You're going down this road that, I mean, I guess if we would have brought the Irish over here and then deported them all before we built the railroads and built the I&M Canal, we wouldn't have railroads and I&M Canal. So
No, Chief. The difference is this. We brought the Irish over here, but the Irish were able to think in future perfect tense because if they didn't, they starved to death.
I happen to know an awful lot of Hispanic people that are at least as bright as some of the Irish people that I knew when I was young.
Look, I'm not saying... did I say Hispanics? I don't think so. The problem is this.
Well, the Russians know how to put food away for winter. They haven't had a decent government in how many years? Never.
Which set of Russians?
What do you mean? The Russians. Okay. They went from the Tsar to a bunch of losers.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what communism...
And they're all white. I mean...
that's what I didn't say anything about skin color either. By the way, that certain groups have infiltrated in certain places over the years is not really that's not a controversial statement. That's a factual statement. And the reality of it is this: we live in a world where when this nation was founded, the people who came over here, all of them who originally came over here, were able to think in future perfect tense.
They were also kicked out of places because they were so racist and everything else, nobody wanted them.
But they all were able to think this way. Why? Because they got on the boat.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
They got on a boat because people were chasing them.
Well, okay, but you know what? Yes, you're being chased, but if you can't think in future perfect tense, you are convinced that that is an absolute death sentence to get on that boat.
I absolutely agree, and I'm curious as to why in certain... It seems like the most industrious people have always been in latitudes where you have a climate change.
Gee.
Now, whether that means you have to put stuff away or whatever or not, I don't know. But also, know that there were massive growth populations that did pretty well in Rome, Greece, and they don't have that much of a time climate change.
They have enough of it.
Yeah, you know, there also were places in Mexico where they didn't have a whole lot of climate change, or in Egypt. Somehow or another, that all went the way of the dinosaur. And, yeah. And there are even people who say that before the Sahara Desert was a desert, there were all kinds of people there that somehow made it, and then all of a sudden became a desert. So, I mean, if you go back on this history, it's kind of hard. I would say that I am curious as to why certain parts of the world, maybe it's because the people... they have so many people so fast or whatever. It is kind of interesting in some continents, Africa and other places, there doesn't seem to be, you know, the democratic spirit. Now, whether, you know, who knows? Is it because of, why was Europe so far different in this regard? In terms of, is it because of religion? Is it because of the Catholic Church? I don't know. Where you wrote stuff down, you're supposed to learn... Where it all came from, I don't know. I mean, but somehow...
Yeah, I don't think anybody could tell you exactly where it came from.
But there's no question that we are product of the... You actually write stuff down, and there is this thing called law. There is a thing called property rights. And yet I also know that if you look at the North American Indians, you know, why didn't they have a lot of this stuff? Even though some areas they did. Well, there are people who would say because they didn't have domesticated animals and they didn't really have farming. Well, domesticated animals mean, and farming means people stay in one place.
Right.
If you stay in one place, it means you have to have some sort of property rights. And by the way, if 50 people are going to live together, there has to be, you know, some rule that somebody's kid can't go run around and steal your chicken every night.
Right.
You know, so what comes first, the chicken or the egg, really? I mean, I don't know. I mean, the North American Indians are sort of like, in terms of culture, are like the people from the... you know, the Genghis Khan group. Not that they were bad, but the idea that it was a horse hunting kind of thing. And you had, I'm sure they had laws that based, God help you, I suppose if you took somebody else's horse, but the laws were different. They were for the, you know, I'm still learning this stuff, and I'm going to go to my grave wanting to learn a lot more, but, I mean, there's reasons for all this crowd. But I think the biggest thing here is we think of this idea of democracy. Well, there's flaws in it, because when people go to vote, it's worth more for some people to vote than others.
Right.
Obviously. How do you can't stop that, but how do you mitigate that? We're going to have an election where you and I and Kevin and everybody else on the show spend a lot of time and effort talking about what the real issues are. I mean, I'm going to talk about money supply, you're going to talk about, and you agree with that, and you're going to talk about health care, and nobody can disagree with that. I mean, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. I'll make you a high-end booze bet, one drink, that one of the things we talk about is ever going to come up in this campaign.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I mean, and it's, and by the way, it's already not, okay? I mean, you know, but here's the problem, the basic problem that you have, you know, we've always, there's always been some form of law, there's always been some form of police, and there's always been, in all human civilizations, there's always been some form of jail, right? Or punishment, if you will, right? Whether it be jail, slavery, indentured servitude, execution, whatever have you. Always been there. Why? Because there are always jackasses. Some percentage of the population, no matter how small, will not play by the rules. And you have to have a means of enforcement, and every society has that as a requirement.
Every law implies important. Hey, can we go to break? We didn't do the first one, and then we'll come back. I guess if you're just only down 15, and we're down a little more. As if you're down 82, not much happening today. We got a lot of numbers coming out. I will say what those are in a minute. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up Stocks and Jacks. I'm out. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 19. Is it Futures down 98? Ricky dialed up some nasty weather coming in. A little rain, 40-mile-hour wind walking down the block. I blame him. Just saying. Yesterday was nice. We got the economic numbers today. There's a bunch of those. We've got last quarter last year. The first one we're going to get out of that group. And there's like three of them. Well, let me read the whole list here while I'm doing that. We've got the PCE, which Carl's going to laugh at as soon as we're done with breaks. We've got the income, I think. We scooped down to today. Yeah. Well, let's go back to the market here. Over in Europe, the European stocks, DAX up 67.3%, FTSE up 60.5%. CAC around up 65.8. So those guys are up a little bit. Asia, let's see if these guys are back up. Nikkei's open. They're down 642. That's 1.1%. That's a big move. Hang Seng, they're open as well. Down 292, 1.1%. However, Shanghai is not because it's the Lunar New Year. You're the horse. Carl, are you a horse?
No, I'm not.
Ricky, are you a horse?
No, Chief.
You know what you are?
I'm a rabbit.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I'm a dragon. That's supposed to be real good. I don't know how this worked out, but I guess it worked out okay. A 10-year down 1 basis point, 4.0. So these bond rates have been really stable for a while here. Bund down 1 basis point, 2.73. Oil, well, it has been up all week based on the Iran tensions. Down 34 cents today, 66.09. Brent down 34 cents, 71.32. So it's really come up from around the 60 level to 66. But, it shows really no sign of zipping to 100 or anything like that. I mean, hope it doesn't, but it really doesn't show that. Gold up 51 bucks, that's a full percent. Silver up 285, that's almost 4%. Foreign exchange, dollar set for biggest weekly gains. We've got the euros down to 117. It actually topped 117.6. It topped over 118 last week. British pound, 135. That's been sort of the same, so it hasn't done that much. Crypto, down 180. It's kind of quieted down here in this mid-60s range after going from 70 to 60 fast, 60 to 70 fast, and now it's kind of settled in the middle. Not sure what the message is there either. Ricky, what do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 here in Chicago, 34 degrees right now with a high of 38. Cloudy, very, very windy and colder with a bit of snow and rain at times this morning. Little to no accommodation, though, will be followed by a flurry early afternoon. Tonight will be breezy and a low of 26 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 54 degrees right now with a high of 63. Cool with intervals of clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy and chilly with a low of 43 degrees. Let's talk traffic in Chicago. Accident reported northbound on Dan Ryan at local lanes west before Canalport Avenue. Left lane is locked and expect delays of up to 5 minutes. Edens and Kennedy are looking pretty clear though. There is some traffic along Eisenhower, about 28 minutes inbound from Wolf. And lastly, stop and go traffic on Stevenson inbound. Sports real quick. NHL is on break, as we know, of course, but the U.S. women's hockey team just won gold over Canada yesterday after a perfect undefeated tournament. And for the NBA, the Bulls lose to Raptors yesterday 110-101, and we also have the Suns losing to Spurs 121-94. Now tomorrow Saturday we got Magic at Suns at 4 p.m. and Pistons at Bulls at 7 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Oh god, they're gonna play the Pistons.
Oh boy, this data.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. What are you seeing here?
This is bad, and anybody who's expecting rate cuts into this, you need to go think about MAID, medically assisted death.
Well, I mean, the GDP number is horrible.
The GDP, okay, so real GDP is only plus 1.4, okay, and the. By the way, from third quarter, that was 4.4, so that's a monster loss.
If you believe the 4.4, but yeah, go ahead, keep going.
Yeah. But the problem isn't there. The problem is the price index was up 3.7.
I got core PC year over year 3.0, the full 3.7.
The price index for gross domestic purchases, which is the deflator number that, you know, that black box thing, right? 3.7.
What was it for the month? I got core PCE is 0.4, which is a lot.
Well, this is I don't know about the per month. I'm looking at the quarterly, the preliminary fourth quarter report.
Okay.
The PCE price index was up 2.9 compared with 2.8 last quarter. But the problem is that the PCE, the price index for domestic purchases, was up almost 4%. Now that's double, very close to double the supposed 2% target.
Yet if the Fed puts out a thing saying tariffs are being passed through, Bessent wants to discipline them.
Well, you know, don't get me started about that little statement of Bessent's, because I have some discipline I'd like to apply, but it's not very legal.
Yeah.
And there's some people that I think ought to get a large chunk of it. The I don't, as I've said many times, I do not have any issue at all with using tariffs as a means of stopping wage and environmental arbitrage.
By the way, you've got me to the point where I agree with you on that.
And we should have done it 20 years ago. Okay, the fact that it's going to cause a dislocation effect during the time that it takes place. Well, yes, it is. Duh. This is what happens when you screw people for 20 years, and then you think, well, I'm just going to go fix it in a week.
All right, can I back up and say what you're talking about? The regular people. Not that you can't communicate yourself with. What Carl's talking about is if Chief Carl Enterprises have a factory on our side of the Rio Grande, and we can't pollute, and our widget costs $50, and we decide we're going to put the factory on the other side of the Rio Grande and pour crap into the Rio Grande that saves us $5, Carl would like the tariff to be $5 to even that up, which makes perfect sense to me. Is that what you're talking about, the simplest base?
Yeah, that's the simplest way to look at it. And the thing is that, you know, this is the problem with not doing that is that every scream fest group of some kind latches on to something that they claim is a better deal. For example, you have this whole thing with solar energy, right, and wind power. And they say, well, but it's cheaper. It's only cheaper because the panels are made in China. They're non-recyclable. So they impose a life cycle cost on both ends. The materials and chemicals used to make them are extraordinarily noxious and nasty. In the United States, they're expensive to manufacture because if you try to make them here, we don't allow you to dump that crap into the river. Okay.
And somehow these people have the bizarre idea that if you belch coal out of a coal plant or put pollution in the water over there, somehow it'll never reach here, which is really a dumb
idea.
Well,
the last time I checked, there's only one set of oceans and there's only one atmosphere. Okay, so
it's basically planet Earth, spaceship Earth, right?
Right, exactly. And so the thing is that, you know, this has been one of my, you know, my stalking horses and screen points for a very, very long time. All right. But, you know, nobody seems to care about it. Okay, whatever. But here's the problem is that when you correct this, it's the same kind of thing that you say, you know, with the healthcare scams. If you stopped them all tomorrow, you'd fire 80% of the people that are in the healthcare system and all this employment
you wouldn't fire anybody giving anybody care.
You wouldn't fire the doctors and the nurses.
No.
But the entire billing department would be two girls behind the desk.
Yeah.
Okay? And there'd be none of this and the entire insurance business for the most part would disappear because
the billing department for my dentist was his wife.
Yeah, well, that's when I was a kid, I went to the doctor. There was a girl behind the counter that took a check from my mom.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that was the billing department. Yeah. So and you either paid, and if you couldn't pay right then, okay, guess what? You know, today you whip out your credit card. But the thing, and people, you can't do it. Yes, you could, because the price would be a fifth of what it is today.
All right, Kyle. Serious question. Not that we're not all serious. We had a 4.4% number last quarter, which everybody looked at and said, what the hell is that?
I said that was BS. Yeah.
And now we've got a 1.4% number.
Right, right.
And the prediction for both, and I'm talking about nominal number here, not nominal. I don't believe the PC, but I'm saying the prediction both months was 2.5.
Well, the current dollar GDP, Chief, last quarter was 5.1.
Right, okay. What I'm axing here is, Is it possible, since if you add the 1.4 to the 4.4, you get 5.8.
Divide by 2.
If you divide by 2, are we actually pretty close to the 2.5 if you just rounded the 2 months together? Is there some sort of a timing issue here? Is there something screwed up with the way it's picked up? Was it because government was down for a while? I mean, in other words, if you look at the 2 months together, it doesn't look either all that good or all that horrible.
Well, it's not months, it's quarters, because the GDP is a quarterly release.
Right, so then I'm just changing the question then. Is it
right?
Is there some sort of a timing issue? Is this stuff when things are ordered? Is it when they're delivered? I mean, because the numbers seem, first of all, you don't go from 4.4 to 1.4, I don't think.
Unless
something really weird happens.
Well, no. Here's the thing. The current dollar GDP last quarter is 5.1.
Okay.
The whole problem was inflation.
Yeah.
That's the reason it's 1.4.
Yeah, back to the how do you count an $80,000 truck versus a 40?
Well, but the problem isn't the current dollar amount of output. It's that prices went up dramatically. And yet everybody's telling us that's not happening. Well, I got news for you. I see it in the store every day. You know.
It's way worse if you're not at the store. Try and get anything done to your house.
I got very strategic about this about a year and a half ago with a couple of things that I wanted to have done because I smelled this coming. All right, as it turns out, I was right. Do I want this in the keister? No. So I'll take the hit now because it's long term capital improvement type stuff. But the issue that we have here is that in the context of what people are expecting, and I've said that when you do these compounded things that don't sound so terrible over the space of a year or 2 years, and you let this stuff go on for 20, right? When the snapback comes, it's nasty. And this is how we've had both of the last two blow-ups, the 2000 blow-up and the 2008 blow-up. Rather than deal with either one of them, we papered it over with more credit emission. We generated another huge bubble. All right. Now you've got the same thing going on in this AI space, all right, which is, by the way, in the process of coming apart. And you've got, you know, companies like Elon's, you know, Confab Fest, Tesla with what is it, like a 280 PE or something like that?
Yeah, Well, we're just betting on Elon Musk. He's brilliant.
Okay, well, you know what? He's brilliant.
And he's also told you that any money he makes, he's gonna take it, never give it to you.
He's gonna get it.
Yeah.
Right. And oh, by the way, on top of that,
how do people not recognize that?
Well, here's the other. Because they can't think. They have no future present tense. All right, no future perfect tense. And here's the thing. Then, you know, he goes out with this nonsense, not only about self-driving cars, which was, 10 years ago, right? Where are they? Try this new one. It's much better than the last one.
Well, yeah. Where was the last one?
Well, where was the one that you told me I was going to have 8 years ago where I could get in the back of the car with a six-pack? All right, how come that one's not out there? And then the other thing, you know, he's the same thing with SpaceX. And, you know, we're going to Mars. No, you're not. We're going to the moon permanently. No, you're not. you know, and yet people buy it.
Carl, how much of the, I was thinking about last Saturday, I'm awakened by all this incredible noise. I'm going, what the hell's going on? They're taking a tree down on my block, right?
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, it was a really tough thing to do because people next door have a side lot and have this huge deck.
Yeah.
There was this massive tree in the side lot.
Right.
So they built a deck around the tree.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, now he and the guy next door, you know, my scruff's not around anymore, my pooch, so he's been gone for a while, so I don't really walk that much around. But evidently, I don't know if the thing was showing its age or dropping some branches or what, so they get together and then he and the guy next door decide this thing's got to come down. Well, it's a hell of a job to get it down.
Right.
And so they get some guys who do it for like $9,500. And I mean, it was a, talk about an operation. They had a couple of big claw things. They had a crane, a huge crane. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And evidently they had gotten bids up to $60,000.
Yeah.
And you wonder what's going on with, if people, if they don't, quote, got a guy or what, or they have no concept. Not only are the prices going up, but it seems like people are allowing through advertising. And one of the local stations here, there's a few places, you know, air conditioning places and so forth, they advertise all the time. And, you know, I got no problem with that. It's what advertising's for. But somehow or another, a couple of them, I know guys that have gotten, like, bids for, like, a door, $4,000 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, just because you advertise doesn't mean you get to be a thief. Well, some guy builds this house out by Audrey. And I'll tell you what, Carol, if you saw this thing, you'd say, what the bleep? It's got to be, I mean, Audrey's pretty good at this, 25,000 square feet maybe. Guy's got a pond on the property, makes the pond into a lake with like a boat dock.
Yeah.
And puts a pool like right next to that with a pool house. 7-car garage. It has a thing out front. And in the back, there's another like house with another 2-car garage for like the in-law that he doesn't like or something. And in the front, there's a full, not concrete, but stone from the street to a big, massive gate structure. Turns out he's the guy who runs one of these heating and air conditioning joints that advertise on TV all day long.
Oh, yeah. What, big shock, right?
Yeah, I'm like, I assumed the guy was like a, you know, a major league ball player or something.
Nope.
I'm like, man, I mean, how much are people being taken for on just a daily thing?
Well, I'll tell you what. Like a year and a half ago, when Biden had the, you know, one of the things that they had in there was the, you know, the tax credits for, you know, for so-called energy efficient.
Yeah,
you know, replacement of appliances, right? Okay, well, my HVAC system was original to the house, and it wasn't completely dead, but I didn't like the condition of the coil. And, you know, I mean, I look at these things every now and then, and I didn't like the, you know, the condition of that at all. And the problem was that with what they were doing, the refrigerant changes and stuff, which, by the way, is yet another scam that was engendered because the other one went off patent.
Have you checked how much, if you got a 20-year-old air conditioner, how much it costs to charge it up? It's like $500.
Well, that's exactly the problem, okay, is that you know, the coil was bad. Okay, so if I have the coil changed, I got to pay for the coil. But the problem is I got to pay for the refrigerant. All right, which, oh my God.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, and oh, by the way, I've still got a 20-year-old box out there, right?
Yep.
Something else could break. So I'm like, all right, you know, that makes no sense. And by the way, I can take a tax credit, which, okay, that doesn't offset the cost, but it does blunt it a little bit, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll do this. So I went around and I had this thing quoted out. The difference in prices, Chief, between these different places that came out here and gave me bids was unbelievable.
Well, right? It depends on, they look at you. If they think you're a chump, they give you a high bid. If they don't, they don't. And if it's one of these companies that advertise, they get so much business, they don't know what to do with it.
Well, and that was the thing, was that, I mean, I was like, you got to be joking me. I mean, you would think that if you went out and you had, you know, you got five bids, that they, you know, you'd have one or two outliers, but most of them would be reasonably tightly clustered, right? Boy, was that wrong.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so, I mean, there's a place that's real close to the house here, and their bid was reasonable. They did good work. It's, you know, they did the job. It's done. I'll tell you, though, here's another thing. So while we've been talking, I've been digging through this.
Let's talk more about these numbers.
Because we got the personal income and outlay numbers out for December, okay? This is horrific for anybody that is, again, thinking that you're going to get more rate cuts, you're going to get more monetary stimulus, you're going to get any of this. All right.
I will bet you that the president will be on today saying the GDP is so low we need rate cuts.
The president, Trump could bite me. The GDP is not low in current dollar terms. It's inflation that made the number low. Okay. Let's have more monetary stimulus to make inflation go higher. So the large increases here in this report. Now this is just December. All right. This is a kind of a frightening one because
this December. This is not quarterly.
No, this is monthly.
Okay.
Consumer spending increase, the total increase $91 billion. The increases were in housing and utilities, recreation services, healthcare, financial services, and insurance and other services.
None of the stuff that's any fun.
These were the outliers.
Yeah.
Okay. These are the things you have to buy. All right. And by the way, housing and utilities does not include gasoline and energy goods because that's broken out separately. And
right.
That was up as well. And then everything else is, you know, in the either the low gain in terms of billions of dollars or entre negative. All right. Other non-durable goods, clothing and footwear and durable goods, negative. Now, this is December. I seem to remember that there's this holiday that comes in December.
This had to be for regular stuff that you normally bought people. This had to be the worst Christmas ever.
Well, that's what it looks like to me. I mean, this is, and the thing is, what this is not by choice. This is forced.
What about the personal income number? Your chance to look at that?
Yeah, the personal, so here's the thing, the DPI, so remember, disposable personal income is the, you know, is what you got left after it's over, right? Now, DPI in non- inflation adjusted numbers was up 0.3. All right.
Now, does that include appreciation of stocks and things, or is it just wages and stuff?
Well, it would include realized gains, I would think.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you cashed things, you know, going into the end of the year, yeah, I'd expect that it would be included. I mean, income's income, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, that's but here's the thing. Real PCE adjusted for inflation up 0.1%. And the reason, again, is the price index was up 0.4.
Yeah.
Now they have 0.4, and also including the if you take food and energy out, it was still up 0.4.
Yeah. I mean, that's, they have that. So, yeah, when your income's up less than the PCE, even though the PC is something we probably don't even believe, that's not good.
Well, you know, you wonder, is the economy getting better for the average person?
I think the answers to that have been no for 25 years.
I'm just saying, that is a big no, right? Yeah. So, I mean, here we are with, you know, with the data being what it is. But what you're seeing here is that the idea that tariffs are, and again, I like the idea of using them in a reasonable way. The way that this administration has been using them is nuts. Okay. But then again, most of what's been going on is nuts. I mean, you know, there's a real probability that we're going to start a real no BS war with Iran here in the next week or so.
Did you listen to Wayne yesterday talking about whether...
No, I was actually skiing yesterday, so then on my way back from up north.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of really, really nice days, and probably going to head west because now they're actually getting snow in Colorado, which they haven't been for a long time.
Yeah, well, they finally got some.
One of the places I like to go got 3 feet in the last couple of days.
Well, they better get like another 20 feet because that's what they need.
Well, I know.
The guy said that the dryness in the Denver area, and they said they couldn't really measure snowpack back then, but right. Because it's equal to two of the Dust Bowl years. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, but remember, back in the early part of last year, I pointed out that the ENSO readings that we had at the time were portending both no hurricane hits on the CONUS, which verified, okay, and that also, I hope you like white crap in the Midwest, which is verified very well also. Now, what I didn't, because I didn't have the context, I didn't live it. I was too young to be paying attention on a, you know, on a U.S.-wide basis. I had no idea what those years were like out in, you know, out in Colorado and Utah and stuff like that.
Well, they claim that in the same thing that the neutrality that you were talking about in the Pacific is now turning into El Nino. So we're going that direction. Do you confirm that?
Well, it's a little early to know. Yeah, I mean, it looks that way. That, you know, neutrality doesn't stay that way forever, right? It changes. So the what was unusual was that as we were coming into the spring and early summer, it is unusual for it to stay that way for an extended period of time, and it did. And the last time that we had that kind of condition was, you know, was during those years that I lived up north and oh my God. Okay.
Well, the big high pressure over New Mexico is what they claim is what caused all the dryness, or the northern New Mexico, and now that's kind of dissipating as well. That's why we're getting snow in Iraqis finally.
Yeah, basically what it is that normally this time of year you get this atmospheric river effect that you get systems that come in off the Pacific, and they get lofted by the mountains, and hello.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, and that's, I mean, it's not unusual for, you know, for the Colorado Rockies to, you know, get a foot of snow overnight. That's a totally common kind of thing. But it hasn't been happening.
Where did they get the 25, 30 inches?
Well, it you had it one of those atmospheric river. You know,
what resort are you talking about?
Oh, I'm not talking about exactly where that was.
Okay, because I mean, Lou was talking. They got 20 inches last weekend, and it was supposed to happen again. So, wouldn't surprise me.
Well, yeah, they got more coming, and in fact, the place that I like to go out there has a warning up today that says if you're going skiing today, you really ought to be doing it with a partner. Because they got a foot and a half last night, and the last storm, almost 4 feet.
Wow.
And it's not over. So, I mean, because it's coming down, like, right now. Like, I looked at their webcam, and it's a blizzard. So.
Well, Lake Mead could use it. All right, so what's the upshot of these?
Well, they're getting it.
They're
getting it out there.
So what's the upshot of these numbers, you think? I mean... Our market doesn't seem to react to all that much. We were down 15 before. We're up down 90 now. I mean, and the S&P's and the NASDAQ, not much of a shocker here. I mean, it doesn't seem like it. Are all these numbers already front-run to other people or what? I mean, it didn't even make any difference.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little surprised, frankly, that we didn't get more of a reaction here because I would have expected a serious dump in the futures on this.
Well, it is 6 weeks ago. It is a rearview mirror number.
Okay, it's 6 weeks ago, and by the way, we didn't get a huge dump, you know, during those last 6 weeks either, did we?
No, no.
I mean, you know, so I mean, you'd think, well, you know, gee, we were wrong about how wonderful everything was over the holiday season. You'd think that some of that, you know, that fairly decent performance market-wise would come off. And it hasn't. So there you go.
Well, here's kind of the million-dollar questions or more if you got a bigger account. This year, if we go into a personal recession, even worse than I think we're in now, and you know, the real economy's down 1 to 3% inflation versus earnings for the average person.
Right.
And yet, these guys goose the money supply by 8%, like Hal's predicting. Where's the stock market? I'm saying it's not down.
No. If you try to continue to do this, the market somewhere right in front of the elections into the summer and into the elections blows up. And the reason
I'm with you on the blow up part, because it happened in 29. I just somehow or another all the money going to the very few people and regular people, but and the money coming in where the prices everybody feels like they're doing a good, everybody tells you how good you're doing, but you're not.
Right.
I think it's going to end some way. But then again, Carl, we've been predicting this for how many years? It hasn't happened yet. I mean,
I
learned a huge lesson in COVID. Could have been a bigger depression, and the market was up the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. That's certainly a an issue here.
Plus, the last day of the Weimar Republic, I think the market went up.
So there's
their currency terms.
Right, but the thing is that I don't think that's coming this way. I frankly, the thing is that what you got out of Weimar though ultimately, right?
Oh, yeah.
The funny Austrian painter shows up, right? And this is we are in a position now where the squeeze is getting severe enough on the ordinary Joe that possibility is very real.
I agree.
And I'm very, very concerned about that.
We're a couple minutes late, so we won't run over a couple. It's not like 1929 where only 7% of the people were invested in the market. Now, the stuff that happened to banks and everything else cleaned out the rest of the people. But this time, the major amount of the wealth is still in the top half of 1%. But there's an awful lot of 401k wealth around where a lot of people, maybe that they're not getting the raise they deserve or they think they want or whatever, vis-a-vis inflation, they have a little strong box in their 401k. I'm going to say the top, 1,000 people, if they take a 40% hit in some stock that's, if Jeff Bezos takes a 40% hit, I'm not going to shed too many tears because I don't know if he should end in the first place. But obviously, I care about my people in their 401ks. Now, I try, and we agree with clients. We will act to protect that, which costs money. But we're gonna stop that from happening to a large degree. But I think we're gonna kick away a lot of everyman here as well. I mean, I think I've heard of people that got a second mortgage to buy Bitcoin. So Bitcoin drops 50% from here. It's not just going to be the people hanging around in Puerto Rico. There's going to be people here. There's going to be people in God knows where, in a place you never even dreamed they have a Bitcoin. I got an email from somebody. I think she lives in Oklahoma or someplace. She says she does these contests on TV or radio. Is there some gaming you can do online where you actually can make money? So she makes money, but they're all paid in Bitcoin. So Bitcoin goes down, she's broke. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like freaking crazy.
Well, we got to do it, but the long story short is you never really know the penetration of the margin on this stuff. And you're with me on that, I think. You never know who's got it. You never know who's got it.
Right.
Anyway, but so when are you, how long are you resting before you head out west?
Probably a week or so. And then, I'm going to let this go a little bit because they've had kind of a, like I said, the snowpack out there has been kind of crappy, like it is for everybody else, right? But I mean, it's not going that's not going away in a few days.
Well, you probably couldn't even drive there today.
I could probably get there because they're pretty good with the roads, and I have both triple peak rated tires and chains.
You know what? I never I'm not going to chain rod. If I need to do the chain rod, I'm out. I got the good tires.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got them. I'm not saying I like the idea of putting them on, especially when it's, five below zero.
Yeah.
Getting out and putting them on is a pain in the butt. But
so what happens when the first piece you get dry, the first time you hit something dry, you beat the hell out of your tires and you?
Well, you're only going 20 miles an hour with chains on.
All right.
Because you can't go any faster than that. You'll either tear the chains up or you'll break them, and then you'll tear your car up. So, yeah, they'll...
Oh, God.
They will catch on things.
Well, I'm sure you'll do the right thing. SP Futures down 17. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. SA Futures 92. Hopefully we don't have any big war this weekend and we can talk normal on Monday. Ricky, thank you. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.